All right, here we go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. What a Monday it is in Kansas City.
Couple of things going on.
Just a few things. Just a few, of course. Royals, ALDS, game two tonight in the Bronx. Cole Reagan's on the bump. We are going to talk plenty about that throughout the show. Josh Vernier is going to join us at 12:30. Our Royals Insider. Reminder, the Royals-Yankees game is later on this evening over on The Fan, 6:10 a.m. And then we have Chiefs, Monday Night Football, Saints in town. Chance to stay undefeated heading into the bye week. What does this wide receiver room look like with no Rice, no Hollywood Brown? All of that is in play today. And by the way, the Chiefs game, pregame coverage starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. So it's a busy day. I hope everybody had a good weekend. I know Saturday was stressful. Saturday night, much like most postseason baseball, I mean, that game was just so intense. It was a hell of a baseball game. I know it didn't end, and we're going to talk about issues throughout the game and things like that, but that was a great baseball game.
Sometimes, because it's been a while since we saw like regular postseason baseball, I forget about things that I don't remember exist. Like, I forgot how much I hate the other fans being happy. I hate him. I hate him for being happy at my misery. Uh-huh. And so, like, that just makes me even more irrationally mad at the game. And you just find yourself living and dying on those pitches. And so the playoff stuff, it just like it brings back all these emotions you didn't realize you had towards other fan bases or people of those fan bases or a million other things. But yeah, it was an excellent baseball game that ended up pissing me off because of the way that it ended and because they lost a game that I felt like they had control of a couple of different times inside the game, even though it was only a one-run lead for every team the entire way and back and forth, more lead changes than I think than any game
five
postseason history. So just like it was back and forth and wild. But the thing everyone's talking about is the thing you would expect everyone to be talking about. Michael Massey seemingly getting a tag down on Jazz Chisholm, only for Major League Baseball to take a nice hard look at it to end up nowhere.
Strike him out, throw him out, feel like, okay, all right, get out of the jam. Not quite.
He's going. Swing and a miss. Throw is high. And Chisholm steals second. Checking to see whether it's worth it to challenge.
Well, the problem with Chisholm is the slide.
Yeah, maybe.
He lands a little short and pops up, and does Massey get the tag in on time? Yes, he does.
I spoke too soon. It's at least close enough to check.
Yeah, he's going to be out at second base just because it was a bad slide.
How about that?
He came up 6 inches too short, and Massey with the wherewithal to slap the tag down. Outstanding play. Chisholm had been 14 for 16 on stolen base attempts from the seventh inning on, but I believe he's going to be out.
So that was
God, that's the most frustrating thing to hear after you know what happened.
Everybody, I mean, obviously, like, depending on who you were watching the game with in Kansas City, everybody thought he was out, but those are neutral parties involved. There was the post-game audio from David Ortiz as well, talking about it and others. It was a bad call. It was a horrendous call. It was a mistake. He was out. MLB postseason replay review, same problem as at times we saw with the Royals in the regular season. Let's talk about this for a second, and then I want to talk about what are, I think, bigger problems because
the things that led to the loss?
Yeah, because like this was a terrible call, and I was pissed off in the moment, as I'm sure everybody was. I also hate being, because we criticize on the football side fan bases that say, this call. So I hate that. I hate saying that's why the Royals lost. It was part of the equation. It was a terrible call after overturn. I don't know what they saw.
At an incredibly important moment of the game.
It was terrible. But man, when you see that particular circumstance play out, I thought Michael Massey's post-game comments were 100% fitting for the situation that, man, oh man, if that's a play that we can't get correct, then how am I supposed to believe any play can be correctly called through replay review?
Okay, so nobody can claim that I'm just saying this now, because my stance has been very firm on this show for years now. No, I do not think that that is the single biggest reason why they lost the game. Did it have an impact? Well, I'm not an idiot. Of course it had an impact on whether or not they lost the game. It was at the most pivotal moment of the game, and the very next hitter, who, yeah, he still could have gotten out and saved himself the trouble of getting the run in, was eventually the game-winning run. But if this is the way replay works, abolish it. It's stupid. I have to stop myself from cussing sometimes because, like, the urge to be like, this is the dumbest, stupid system that if Gold can agree, Yankees fan can agree, Yankees broadcasters can agree, and oh yeah, I listen to their call, Royals broadcasters, the national call, when they toss back to Ortiz and A-Rod, can all agree that he's out. Everyone agrees he's out. Everyone except for the man who stole the base, Jazz Chisholm, pretty sure he's never going to say it. Everyone agrees he's out. And Major League Baseball's like, not enough evidence. I'm like, but how? How can all of society agree that one thing is one way? And you're trying to tell me that you're like, well, we can't, there's not a pressure sensor in Massey's glove, so we can't be sure that he actually tagged him. It's stupid. If you're going to get it wrong, I've already said this before, just abolish it. Then he's safe. He gets the single. I always question that he was out. But so what? It's the system. There is no replay. Their replay is the worst in every sport. Tennis is better. Football's better. They're all better. It stinks. They're not even subjective. This is the difference between football and baseball. It drives me crazy. Pass interference is technically subjective. Yeah, you can always like hold a little or pass interfere or those things and kind of maneuver the things inside. He's either out or not. There's no subjectivity to out. He got tagged before he touched the base. He's out. So like, yes, there are other things, but I hate Major League Baseball replay. And postseason just going to piss me off.
This is what Michael Massey had to say postgame. This was courtesy of 41 here in Kansas City. They were out in New York talking to him about the call and really just replay in general.
Yeah, I mean, I actually just got back from watching the video. So it's frustrating because the video that I saw looked pretty convincing to me. So I know they said they didn't see anything, but In my opinion, it's one of those things where if that's something that's not going to be overturned, then I don't really know what's clear and convincing. But I'm not really sure the whole point of the system if a call like that is not going to, you know, I saw we tagged up the photos and you could see clear contact and then you could see the daylight between his foot and the base. And I mean, if we're looking for more evidence than that, it's, and I think a lot of calls need to start staying the same as they were called on the field. So. But that being said, that's not the reason we lost the game. You know, we had plenty of opportunities to score runs and make plays. We didn't, and you know, frustrating. But we'll be back at it on Monday.
I think that last part is ultimately where I sit
he's dead right
in the moment. Everybody's pissed off. It was a terrible call, and I'm not saying that nobody should be upset about that. Still, I'm not saying that it didn't factor in the game. But let's also recognize, they walked 8 batters in that game. Angel Serpa, in the 5th inning in particular, he couldn't get a single out. He walked 2. He just didn't have it, period.
Walked in 2 runs.
We'll talk about Q's decision-making, and this is the, hey, on one hand, it works great the game before. He's praised for moving on from Lugo, and then Serpa is amazing, and then here's the other side of it, right? This is why I never think you get too high or too low about one particular managerial decision, because it ultimately is, does the player execute or not? And we saw it. We saw that play directly with the same player involved. He executed the last time out. And then on Saturday night, Angel Serpa, of course, did not execute. They could not throw strikes, man. This team could not throw strikes on Saturday night. That, to me, is the bigger problem of the game. And we'll talk about some other individual circumstances. You know, they saw Gerrit Cole great throughout the entire outing. I mean, from the very first inning, they jumped on him. Yeah. Some loud outs. It happens kind of thing. But ultimately, to me, it was more the pitching. The bullpen, in a tough back-and-forth game, really struggled. I don't know if it was, hey, we're not going to let Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Stanton beat us, and so we're going to be really careful how we pitch to them. That's fine. But at some point, man, you got to throw strikes. And there was one particular one, if we want to nitpick, that, yeah, it looks like a strike. But I would also say the Royals were a beneficiary of a couple that probably went against Juan Soto.
It was a bad zone, you know, I think, on
throughout
both
the night. Yeah. But, man, oh, man, the pitching and lack of throwing strikes, it sounds so simple, but there's nothing that's actually more frustrating, even more than the replay stuff to me, is though when you are just walking base runners home, man. I would rather them hit a 2-run double to deep left field.
I'd rather hit a grand slam. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. I mean,
like, then watch people walk runs home.
That's the worst. And we saw that a couple times on Saturday night.
So the single biggest reason they lost is that the pitching wasn't good enough. Now I'll say, thought they got rid of Walker a little too soon.
Yep.
For the same reasons we talked about in that previous inning, you're asking a lot of bullpen arms to be having their day inside a Yankee stadium against one of the best lineups in Major League Baseball. That's a big ask. I think I'd rather let Walker get it. Here's the sucky part, is that the same thing goes down to execution. If Walker gets out number one, I actually think they let him face Soto with the bases empty. And then even if Soto gets on base, I bet because of the career record, they let him face Judge. So Walker, in a weird way, made his own bed. If he had just not walked the leadoff hitter. Just got a ground out, a fly out. I think he actually stays in that game and continues to pitch. But because he had issued yet another walk, they decided to go to the bullpen early.
I think it was that and also his third time through the lineup, you know, at that point in time. As I 2 days, you know, 3 days before that, they pulled Lugo earlier and every move works because every pitcher executed. That wasn't the case. The other thing, though, it's interesting. Anytime the Royals are in the postseason, it seems like we're talking about a third base coach making a decision one way or the other. That was awful. That was terrible. You guys know what we're talking about. The third base opportunity, Salvador Perez, Juan Soto's in right field. Before Salvi even turns third, Soto has the ball in his glove already. He's getting ready to throw. I don't know what was going on there. There in the second inning, you could have bases loaded and nobody out. You were seeing Garrett Cole well.
Only got one run that inning. Should have been more than one.
Yeah, and yes, Gurriel had made a heads-up play. He goes from second to third, thank goodness. So it still allows you to tag up on the sacrifice fly the next batter or whatever later. But that was horrendous at that point. I mean, he wasn't even close, dude. It didn't even take like an amazing throw from Juan Soto. That's on everybody involved in that circumstance. Third base coach will take heat, of course. But
well, Vance should wear it. I mean, it's his job to tell Salvi whether or not to go.
I understand.
He blows through a stop sign. We're having a different conversation.
I understand, man. And
I'm sure there's some scouting that suggested they need to be aggressive on those plays.
Salvador Perez is one of the slowest. It is maybe the slowest player in the series.
That's Giancarlo Stanton, and I will not hear otherwise. Did you see that play, Mike Kelgar? Or Massey got him out on? No way that Salvi's the slowest player in the series.
Stanton and Salvador Perez in a hot dog derby.
I'm winning. Are you kidding?
Maybe.
Are you kidding?
Maybe.
Stanton is moving at glacial speed.
I mean,
dude, Salvi's faster than Stanton. I'm beating Stanton. I might lose to Salvi, but I'm beating Stanton.
Maybe.
He can't even move, dude. He can't even move. But that's the whole problem.
Too many mistakes in the playoffs. I mean, how many things have we listed off here? Yes, a bad replay call that doesn't get overturned, which was BS. Sending Salvi when he shouldn't have been sent. Serpa not throwing strikes. I mean, this is why you lose a baseball game. It was a great game. You lose by a run, and you were still in the game despite making all these mistakes.
The middle of your order didn't come through.
That's why you lose. I mean, look how many things we've listed off.
Yes, but it's not going to make me less mad about that.
I'm not
play.
Saying you shouldn't be mad. I'm
and
just
we
saying
don't know. The Yankees would have still gotten three more outs in order to try to tie it. It's just that it all just boils down to the same. You're the worst replay system on the planet. You never get it right. You just I guess what it is like the intentionally vague language of these leagues to be like clear and convincing. What the hell does that even mean? Like, I thought if we saw daylight and a glove on, that's pretty clear and convincing to me and the rest of society, so I don't understand. But you're right. The walks are the bigger problem. You cannot put 8 free runners on base. Do you know how many times they walk the leadoff hitter? 4. If anybody's ever listened to a Denny Matthews radio call on this station, 96.5 The Fan, they know how Denny feels about leadoff walks in important innings. It always ends poorly. The history of baseball, it ends poorly. That's just another example of a time when it was going to go poor for you. Now, here's the good news. You didn't get walked out of the building again. This is still a very good Royals team who was back and forth with a really good Yankees team. I didn't feel like they were overmatched offensively, overmatched in the bullpen, overmatched in the starting rotation, even though they were throwing their best starter and the Royals were throwing their third best starter. So you've got the starting advantage in the game tonight. So like there are things I can feel okay about. The offense is actually one of them. Weird enough.
Yeah.
Middle of the order did nothing and they still hit.
Yeah. That was promising. They saw Garrett Cole really, really well. And even some of the other bullpen arms, of course, that came in the game. And we'll see with Carlos Rodon tonight, who the Royals actually did hit when they played earlier on in the season. But on both sides, a game that ends up being 6-5, you get 11 runs. It goes way over the over under total for the game and the betting markets. You didn't see on either side that the stars really beat you, right? I mean, like Juan Soto is the one name. Aaron Judge, though, 0-for-4 had the key walk. Stanton had one walk, 0-for-4 on the Royals side. Bobby Wood Jr. 0-for-5. Vinny Pasquantino 0-for-5. Salvi 1-for-4. It wasn't a game in which the stars at the plate necessarily directly with hits. Now, did it make a difference? Is that why there were some walks? Absolutely. I won't act like they were a non-factor. But in terms of actually,
they didn't get the big hit for their
teams. Yeah, and is that going to carry over? I mean, on the Royals' end, I think the promise is that you were able to have MJ Melendez, who whenever they need a big hit randomly in the season, it seems like even in a bad year, he's come up with those. But you got Yuli, you got MJ Melendez, Tommy Pham, heck, Garrett Hampson, a key pinch hit at bat. I know he hits a lot of heat, but he comes up with a key pinch hit at bat. That is promising, sure, heading into tonight. But I find it hard to believe Much like we said going into Saturday's game, like, I don't think you're winning any of these games 2-1 or 1-0, and it was 6-5. 5 wasn't even good enough. I don't think tonight, if the Royals are going to win tonight, and I feel great with Cole Reagans on the mound.
I feel like there's a better chance I can win a 2-1 game tonight.
I don't know if they win without Bobby, Vinny, or Salvi coming through with an RBI on their own. Like, you know what I mean? I just, they almost won with Bobby Wood Jr. going 0-5.
Yeah. Well, but that's, at least the rest of the lineup showed up. You know, MJ Melendez had the big 2-run home run, which was big, even though it's a short porch. We can talk about the stadium in a minute. But the MJ Melendez home run, we said he'd probably come up big. And you mentioned the Garrett Hampson at bat. But yeah, they're going to, I mean, come on, let's just face reality. There's no way the Royals win a playoff series against the New York Yankees, where more of their games are on the road than at home, if Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi are going to be non-contributors.
Yeah.
They know that. I'm not telling any, if they were listening to the show, which they're probably not, if they were listening to the show right now from New York, they understand that they can't win this series or win baseball games without those guys being contributing. The weird reason why I feel good about it is, for the longest time, it felt like the only way they could win is if those guys contributed. They could have won that game, even without any of the three of them making a difference for them in the lineup. Now, I'm sure the Yankees can say the same thing, in which we won the game, and none of our guys, well, Soto did.
The rest of the guys did
not contribute, because Aaron Judge has just generally been not a very good postseason performer.
They're saying the same thing about MJ coming up with the big hits, but, like, I don't know about you, seeing, you know, Gleyber Torres and Alex Verdugo be two of their most impactful hitters was frustrating. You know, it's weird. I mean,
why are Verdugo? Why are you letting, in a weird way, you'd almost rather be beat by Aaron Judge.
You absolutely would, but also this is why the Yankees are really good. Their lineup is they have a really impressive lineup. Just when you think you got through, you know, the tough part of the order, they still have other guys that are capable. But Austin Wells and Verdugo having the games they did were frustrating. The Royals, slight dogs again, not quite as big of underdogs as they were because Garrett Cole's not pitching.
Sure, but it's Cole Reagans.
It's Cole Reagans, though, and you feel good. I mean, that's the last time the Royals have had a pitcher. It's weird, in this postseason, there's three games, but only one of them, and his name is Cole Reagans, has actually gone past the fifth inning. Some of it we could argue about, was he pulled too early, Lugo or Waka?
We'll get into the bullpen decisions,
and we're going to talk about that later. But otherwise, tonight, I mean, virtually don't care what the scenario is. Like, Cole Reagans has to be pitching in the sixth inning.
He's got to be getting himself out of his own trouble.
Yeah, like, if Cole Reagans is not pitching in the sixth inning tonight, I think the Royals are in deep you-know-what. Like, I don't care if, like,
I agree.
He has to be pitching in the sixth inning.
It's gone pretty bleak. But also, you have to kind of treat this like a do or die game, because are you really coming from two down? Like, are you coming from 0-2? I mean, they're great at Kaufman. I'm not saying it's 0% chance, but boy.
Well, yeah, then you're,
I mean, it almost feels like you're walking into a funeral on Wednesday at Kauffman Stadium, which is not what you want the feeling to be into the stadium.
I don't know about that. Like, I think clearly fans will think it's over to a certain extent, but and tonight is massive for obvious reasons. You split and it's a whole different vibe. It guarantees you two home games. All of a sudden you're in position to clinch at home. It's a huge swing tonight, one way or the other. But I think no matter what, even if the Royals were down 2-0, I'm not worried about what the atmosphere is going to be at Kauffman Wednesday. I think we know how
I just meant going into the stadium, not the actual.
But it definitely changes. I mean, tonight is just you can't overstate how massive splitting those in New York would be. We said that going into the series. You know, can you come back with a split? That's all you got to do. And that is still in front of them. That's still a possibility. Saturday was uber frustrating, but what we said they need to do is still right there tonight. Still right there tonight for the Royals, which would be the split. You come back, and then all of a sudden, you have the advantage. I mean, at that point, it's a split, and you have the advantage because the next two are at the K. So, tonight is massive. I know everybody will be like, oh, well, the Yankees, you know, they'll be happy with the split. I don't know about that.
I don't think they'd be happy with the split. Now, they already got game one.
Not when they are in a position to make it to where the Royals have to win out. Not when the Royals would have to win out the rest of the way if they can't get it done tonight.
Yeah, I know that I should feel worse because, like, the middle of the order did not perform. But in a lot of ways, because they were able to produce runs in ways they were, that's the best the offense has looked in a month. And they did it without the middle of their order. Like, if they somehow put the two things together in a single game, well, they might really put some runs on the board. And that is something we haven't seen them do. We know that they can win via pitching. That's how they've won a huge majority of this season. But they can occasionally win a game in which their offense is the deciding factor for why they won it.
Well
then we're having a conversation, you know?
Is today the day where Salvador Perez breaks out of this semi-slump, whatever you want to call it, he's in? Against Carlos Rodon, 12 hits, 3 homers, 9 RBI, 461 batting average, 846 slug. Those are the numbers for Salvi against Rodon. So those are favorable. Those also go back to many, many years. I understand that. But if you're looking for some reason to feel optimistic, there's that from Salvador Perez. There's also the fact that Cole Reagan's last time out against the Yankees, six innings, seven Ks, gave up three hits, two earned run. You'd sign up for that stat line, six innings, two earned? Yeah. Or does that make you nervous still? Do you think he needs to be better than that?
I don't know how in a playoff game you wouldn't accept that.
That lineup? Yeah, in that stadium?
I don't know how you don't just... Like, if you made me lock it in, I'd be like, but maybe you could do better. No, I'm going to... I definitely think, as you said, in that stadium, under those circumstances, I'm locking in. Speaking of the stadium, I know that this is a... They're always going to make the argument to be like, this goes both ways. That is the dumbest stadium in the league. I'm sorry. These little pop-ups, every time there's like a can of corn to right field, I got to worry the ball's going out of the park. Every time there's a little can of corn, I got to worry about a home run getting hit. And I know MJ got one too. They both got the same amount of weak-ass home runs in the game.
Yeah,
this
in a span of 15 minutes, I sent out a tweet that said, did I mention how much I hate right field 15 minutes later? Did I mention how much I love right field? Because MJ Melendez did come up with a home run.
Melendez lifts it high in the air, deep to right field. Soto's back at the fence, leaps, it's out of here! Into the first row of seats. MJ Melendez returns the favor.
You can't even hear the crack of the bat in the replay. Can you start at the beginning of that? Did it even crack?
The pitch.
Yeah, come on now.
Crack. There's a pretty low. Like, instead, I got off the end. Like, it doesn't.
I get the frustration.
It's just a dumb ballpark.
It's annoying, but hey, that's why MJ Melendez had a home run as well. And it's why hopefully tonight Vinny or Salvi has a home run. You know what I mean?
But then, you know what? I guess part of the problem is there's two things. One, pretending like, hey, anybody can take advantage of this, fine. But one team practices in it 81 times a year, builds their team around a million things.
Well, that's
right?
The argument for regular season stats, the Aaron Judge, Bobby MVP conversation. That's the argument of just, hey, their win-loss.
Yeah, if you're going to let Aaron Judge's home runs count as like he actually hit 55 in that building.
Come playoff time, to me, it shouldn't be as frustrating. Regular season, I think it skews a ton of stats, majorly, especially in the MVP conversation. In the playoffs... You know, you're going to play two, maybe three games in that ballpark in this series if you're the Royals. And in the first game, they got one out, before, and then MJ answered, right? I mean, it's frustrating to watch, but also I would say if MJ Melendez is hitting home runs to right field, then I would call it kind of an even thing.
I also couldn't believe that this is a thing, so I had to go down a rabbit hole. I had tons of Yankees fans in my mention talking about how the analytics support that Kauffman Stadium is a more hitter-friendly park than that.
What
of,
analytics support that?
Than that of New York and than that of my Yankee than Yankee Stadium. And my thought is, are you blind? Are you a dumb person? Like, sometimes you don't have to just take these things. Like, anybody who's watched this sport for more than half a second knows that Yankee Stadium is better for hitters than Kauffman. I don't care what number is saying. Maybe it's because of like the gaps or something.
I think that probably
is
what they're pointing to.
But are we insane here? Someone hit a home run with an exit velocity of like 81 miles an hour this year in Yankee Stadium. There is no way on earth you're going to convince me ever that Yankee Stadium is less of a hitter-friendly park than Kauffman. This is a crazy notion. I mean, this is nuts. I just.
You're way more bugged by the replay review thing. I understand the stadium
replay thing. Yeah.
The stadium thing. Like, I mean, sure. I just, you know, like this is where they've been playing for X amount of years now since they moved from, you know, old Yankee Stadium. Yeah. This is how it is. I mean, Houston for a while had a damn hill in the middle of the outfield.
So
I mean,
weird.
You know,
what
like it is.
Here?
It's, you know,
can we set like a base, like a minimum? That's all I'm saying. Minimum, maximum.
It all goes back to your hate of Derek Jeter, I think. It's
like,
the Yankees. You.
Oh, yeah, we definitely hate the Yankees.
Yeah. But Cody, you have a different level of hate for the Yankees.
Yeah, that might be it. I'll say, though, like, would you like it if the Royals built a stadium and it was 600 feet to center? You down on that? Like, all these other teams coming.
Touching I-70.
The old polo grounds, man. Like, can we just set a minimum and maximum? That's all I'm asking. Yeah. Small request. Minimum and maximum. I don't want to see a stat anymore that is, this would only be a home run in one stadium, which was
I hear you.
It didn't have an impact. I'm not saying it had an impact on the results of the game on the weekend. It didn't.
Tonight, the Royals are hitting three home runs. Mark the tape. Three home runs to right field. And tomorrow, I want you to say you still hate it when it leads to a walk-off. Not a walk-off, it wouldn't be, but a game-winning home run.
Vinny's going to hit two home runs in you can't complain because Vinny's going to hit two home runs.
If, I guess I got out in the second row. Vinny earns his home runs, you know? Not cheated. He's got to hit him out of Kauffman.
Like double Dale,
I do think from the baseball standpoint, it is kind of stupid the way we judge, like, steroid year or all these. Like, we don't pretend like there's other mitigating factors. Like, we still let in the guys for Coors, like, before Coors got the humidifier, right? The numbers were all...
Coors Field in Colorado for those that are...
The numbers were nuts, right, at Coors for all those years. It's fine. Like, if that's the way it's going to be, Aaron Judge gets his home run, he gets to be in the Hall of Fame, well, then put Barry Bonds in. They're both a giant advantage. Like, Aaron Judge, the stats are out there. He hit, like, 37 home runs this year, not 60.
I don't disagree. You know, the argument is one is, hey, that's where he signed and he was playing in the ballpark, quote-unquote, not his fault. The other is he injected himself
I would say, like, everybody was doing it, and it was, like, the state of baseball.
We don't have to have a whole steroid. By the way, I've told you, I think there should absolutely be a steroid wing of the Hall of Fame. That's fine. I'm not one of these people that thinks they shouldn't be in.
You say put a wing.
Yeah, just have a wing. It's part of the baseball's history. The museum is supposed to be about the history of the game. Yeah. That is part of the history of the game, the steroid era. But anyway, up next, though, let's talk a little Chiefs, and we'll get back to the Royals. Of course, there's a huge Monday Night Football game in Kansas City tonight. Oh. The injury is one of the big stories going in, though. Let's talk about that and the impact it's going to have against the Saints. All right, back here on a Monday. Just getting started. It's Cody and Gold. You guys can always hit us up on the Jays Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. From someone from the 816 said, hey, guys, hate to ask, but can I get a birthday shout-out? It's a Monday. I can maybe bring us some luck. My name is Zach. Best birthday ever with the Chiefs and Royals playing. Happy birthday, Zach. There you go. Whatever good vibes we need to create in the city, we'll do it.
You're doing happy birthdays now, huh?
Yeah,
nice.
Whatever. You know, today's
his birthday.
Today is special. Yeah, it is his birthday, not yours. Not yours.
His birthday.
We need good vibes in the city today, all right? It's a big day. It's a massive day. It means tomorrow morning could be a great day, or it could be a depressing day in this town.
Or a split, where I'm like a little sad, but also happy.
Let's be real. As much as I want the Chiefs to be undefeated, one team might have their season virtually end with a loss tonight. Mm-hmm. So I'll go with...
The other will have nothing changed.
The other one will be just fine, no matter the result. But of course, I want both to win. I feel good about both chances. But I'll admit, on the Chiefs front, let's talk about what is reality for them. And that is, it's a banged up team. And I know nobody is feeling sorry for them. Nobody should. Every team is banged up in the league. I mean, just look across the NFL. It is insane. There's very few teams that are actually healthy. You know, if you look at contenders.
There are a lot of major injuries in the league this year.
Big time. And so, yeah, the injuries are a story tonight. In particular, you know, we're talking about the wide receiver room. And what does that look like? What's the dynamic going to be there? Are we back to just seeing Justin Watson and Juju Smith-Schuster have to come up with big third down conversions and what is otherwise a very frustrating evening at Arrowhead from an offensive perspective? But, yeah, the injuries, you know, when does it catch up to them?
I'm starting to worry it's now. This is we're going to make our predictions today in the 1 o'clock hour, like we typically do ahead of a game. But this is the most worried I've been about them losing in any game I've picked this year. And it's not like they've been without Hollywood Brown before. They have. But now a full game without Rashee Rice. Kareem Hunt is healthy enough to be playing in this game, but he's dinged up. They've had these corners that have been like still recovering from injury a huge chunk of the year. The wide receivers are obviously banged up. It feels like, imagine if there's one other ankle sprain in that group from anybody. I don't even care what level of the wide receiver they're getting at. I'm fearful that the injuries are going to catch up with the Chiefs today. And this is, I'll be honest, this stinks of a Chiefs loss. It reeks of it. Week before a bye week, team that's not playing good football, even though we know that they do have some talent. Derek Carr sneaks up and gets them once every couple of years or so, right? Once every 3 years, it's like the super moon. Ah, here comes Derek Carr every 3 years just to come get a win. It just, I can feel it in my bones somehow that this feels like a Chiefs loss. But the injuries
are huge.
Super
bone or which one?
The super bone specifically. Okay. This game specifically feels that way. And I think a big part of it is the injuries. Because I think at some point, both mentally and physically, it catches up with you until you can kind of like rebound and reset. You have to like restart in the bye week, figuring out who you are again. Andy gets to go back to the grindstone before the 49ers, who have their own injury problems, you go to their town on the other end. It kind of feels like checks due.
No, I get it. I get why you're thinking that way. I'm sure you're not alone. You guys can let us know on the text line, 913-586-7965. I also think, though, at the same time, to me, it feels like, yet again, Cody, all that's true. All the injuries are true. Team not playing well might be true after tonight as well. And yet we'll be saying they're 5-0 and they're going to the bye week and they've got problems, and yet here we are. Like, I think that's like, how would be like, how are they 5-0? Like, that also is a very realistic scenario. You know, I think I would be, it's weird. Before the season started, tonight's game, I would have said, oh, the Saints, doesn't matter. The Saints have been much better. At the same time, they're not playing the same way they were at week 1 and 2 and 3. This is week 1 and 2 in particular. This offense has come back down to earth, talking about the Saints. And so that's what I think. This is a lower scoring, really tight game throughout, stressful game. I think, unfortunately, we're going to have a stressful baseball game and a stressful football game at the same time.
On a Monday night.
I think both are happening.
Can you just get that on a Friday, huh?
I mean, the Saints, if you just take a look at where they've been, in week 1, Derek Carr was essentially perfect against a bad Carolina team. They put up 47 points. He had 4 incompletions, 3 touchdowns. In week 2, they beat up on the Dallas Cowboys, who, of course, have been up and down this year. They score 44 against them. Derek Carr only threw 16 passes, but had 2 touchdowns and 243. And then in their losses, Derek Carr, 14-25, 142 to Philly with a touchdown and a pick. Against Atlanta, they lose to a Falcons team that didn't score an offensive touchdown, 24-26. The last 2 weeks, they have come back down to earth after scoring 40-plus points, kind of like what we thought. I think as much praise as Clint Kubiak, their offensive coordinator, got, I think we're starting to see teams adjust. Injuries are absolutely a factor. That's going to be a factor all year because these aren't short-term injuries. You mentioned Hollywood Brown. You mentioned Rashee Rice.
Those are seasons.
That doesn't matter 5 weeks from now. Those guys are still not going to be available. You know, 2 months from now, maybe Isaiah Pacheco is back in the mix. Sure. I think what the injuries tell me is that while Kareem Hunt himself, yes, is dealing with a shoulder problem, but he's going to start tonight, he might have to be, and he might be, the second or third most important player on the offense, period, tonight. Like, I think, let's take Mahomes out of it. I think Travis Kelce, and there's an argument to be made, Kareem Hunt might be the second most important reason why they win a football game.
Unless I get to just lump in the offensive line.
Fine. I'm talking skill players, but sure, yeah.
Yeah, because then we're having a slightly different conversation. Look, Aaron Schatz, who's come on the show, he handles, like, DVOA stats. We've talked about it. It's an efficiency metric based on how good they think you are on offense, how good you think you are on defense. Like, it's an analytical number, it's a crunched number, and how good you are overall. After tonight, because they already know what the Saints' DVOA is based on where they are, no matter really what happens tonight, the Chiefs will finish the first 5 weeks of the season with, according to their stat, the DVOA stat, the most difficult schedule in the NFL through 5 weeks. If they get through that 5-0, well, then there's just nothing that can stop them from winning football games, you know? Maybe going to the ultimate prize, winning the Super Bowl, the things that we talk about that matter in Kansas City, sure. But winning football games regularly, that's what the Chiefs do best. And if you look at their schedule, they have had a difficult schedule to start. And they still have difficult teams. They still have to take on the Texans, the Bills, the Bucks, the 49ers. I'm not saying there aren't difficult teams on their schedule. But they also get the Raiders twice, the Broncos twice, the Browns, the Panthers. I mean, I got to be honest. Out of just those 6 games I listed, I'd be disappointed if it's not 5-1. So if they're 5-0 after tonight, I got 10-1 before I see the rest of the 6 games they play. Well, I mean, damn, I got 10-, you know, like if they win tonight.
Yeah, I mean,
like it's hard to admit, maybe 11-0 on just those games.
They're going to be the number one seed in the AFC, and it's not even so much, it's them, but also the rest of the AFC. I mean, we're going to talk about this more later in the AFC playoff picture, or if you will, already from a seeding perspective. And how the contenders are performing. I mean, suddenly Buffalo's lost a couple in a row. Baltimore's won a few. We know where Cincinnati is at. I mean, you just go through the AFC picture right now. Yeah. Nobody is all that. Who else is getting the 14 wins in the AFC? You know what I mean? Who else is getting the 13 right now? I struggle to see who else is capable of getting to that. So, yeah, the flaws are there. You mentioned the DVOA stuff. I mean, yeah, and that's that part of the schedule we knew going into the season, the first 5 weeks was going to be tricky. And that was before we knew about all the injuries. So that's why, like, nobody should be panicking whatsoever. It sounded like you were thinking they're going to lose tonight. I think
I'll
it's going to be really tight.
I'm very torn. Either way, I'm predicting a very close game, I'll say. I don't think I've honestly made up my mind. Like, I think if 1:30 I told you they were losing, I'm not being disingenuous. I don't think if I think they're winning,
it'll come down to
just some of the small things. Like, do I think Alvin Kamara in the receiving game is too much? Or do I think they can get one deep pass to Xavier Worthy because, you know, the Saints or Dennis Allen in a late game situation that's close versus Andy Reid seems to favor one guy pretty significantly.
I'm with you that it's close tonight, and you're right, we'll give our final predictions. But I also think, man, since 2020, I looked this up before the show, and the Chiefs are 5.5-point favorites, for those that are wondering. Since 2020, the Chiefs when they're 3 or more point favorites, and tonight fits that, they only cover 37% of the time. Think about that. What I'm getting at is not trying to make a point about sports betting. What I'm trying to say is they win close games, and they still find a way to win.
What's their record in those games, I guess?
Yeah, I could look that up. Yeah, straight up. Like, so that's why people, for many years now, have been frustrated at times. They're like, well, they're not blowing anybody out. They're not covering the spread. Like, I'm sorry if you bet on them and they didn't cover. That's your own fault at this point when you take a look at just the trends and that had not been in their favor. But they can look bad in games. They can be in a barn burner with a minute to go. They find ways to win. It's why we led the show after the week 2 win against Cincy and said, you know what? They're just inevitable. They just are. They find ways to win. Great teams do that, cliche or not. That's what they are. They're going for a three-peat. They got the best coach in football. The quarterback, he's the best one in football, even if right now his performance doesn't show that. He is. They have Steve Spagnuolo, who's the best defensive coordinator in football. They have a top three corner in Trent McDuffie. They have a top five pass rusher. Like, all that, when the moment is its biggest, even if they're not playing well, they make the one play that is necessary to win the game, and they do it time in and time out over and over again.
Yeah, bad teams find ways to miss kicks, fumble balls, goof around at the end of the game, and then lose it, which is what we'll talk about with the rest of the AFC later. But tonight, obviously, is, I'm sure we'll ask you in a little bit, how the hell you're going to try to consume both of these sports to their fullest tonight when the Royals' first pitch is about an hour before the Royals kick off Monday Night Football against the Saints. Man, they need Cole Reagans to be Cole Reagans. And I know that sounds simple, but they need Cole Reagans to go full version, first playoff game in the wild card, full last two seasons when he has his best stuff. They need an ace tonight. The bullpen's been getting taxed, and we can talk about the decisions outside of that in a moment. The bullpen's been getting taxed. The starters haven't been going as long. But Cole Reagans, man, that's the guy. That's your ace on the mound. They had their ace on the mound against your number three starter. Now it's the inverse. It is your time to prove to them why you deserve a big fat paycheck a couple of years from now or many other things. But also, the Royals pitching staff is what carried him to wins. Cole Reagans is the leader of that pitching staff. He was the best of that pitching staff. Lugo was also great, maybe co-number one. But with you two going the next two nights, get Reagans tonight, and then you get to toss Lugo again at home on Wednesday. The whole mood is different. They just need Cole Reagans to be great. Not good. Great tonight.
Absolutely. That's why earlier I said I don't know if anything is going well. If you tell me somehow he's not pitching in the sixth, hell, maybe even the seventh inning, based off of the quick hook the last couple of games, I understand why they did it. But Cole Reagans, you just have to trust that he's getting through it. Even if it could be a sixth inning, he's pitched 5 1/3. There's one out in the sixth inning, and all of a sudden, they've got a man on second, and Aaron Judge is coming up. I don't care. Cole Reagans should still be in that baseball game tonight. There could be second and third with one out in the sixth inning, unless Cole Reagans somehow is at 100 pitches. Even then, I don't know if I care.
I might let him face a couple more batters.
And they're not going to do it. Unless you're telling me Lucas Urseg is coming in the sixth inning, like, which he shouldn't. But I still don't feel great about anybody else to where you don't let Cole Reagans just go out there and make it happen. I mentioned last time out against the Yankees, 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, 3 hits, 2 earned, 3 walks, gave up 1 home run. It was good for a quality start. That's the baseline almost.
That's the minimum I want out of Cole Reagans.
You can say, well, that's a lot to ask. Well, it's the playoffs. He's your best pitcher. It's the playoffs. This is why you had him as your game one starter in the Orioles series. This is why he's Cole Reagans, right? I mean, this is why we talk about him in this light. Moments like this, you should be able to trust him. I think it's a big problem if he's not out there in the sixth and maybe even the seventh inning tonight.
Like the guys who were the other guys who were in consideration for the American League Cy Young, including Tarik Skubal, who won it. He's been showing up in the postseason, man. When his number's called, Tarik Skubal's been pitching aces. So you're in that spot. You want to be in that company. This is the company you want to keep. We talk about how postseason storylines for players get created very quickly. You come up and you no-show in an ALDS game against the Yankees and give up 5, people are going to view you differently maybe for the rest of your career, or at the very least, for the rest of your postseason career here in Kansas City. And I'm not saying one now, if you go and shove 2 games in a row after that, maybe not. But they get made in single postseasons, 2 postseasons. But just more importantly, it's who they are. They need Cole Reagans to pitch like this because this is the biggest challenge he's going to face all year. The New York Yankees lineup is dangerous. Every single one of them is capable of taking you yard. They can. It's a small ballpark. In addition to that, they've got some of the better home run hitters. They've got power up and down their lineup. And the Royals need you in this moment to perform like this. But I also think it's because I don't want to rely on the bullpen to go 5.5 innings again. Six, you know, can't be doing that every day.
The Yankees against left-handed pitching this year. It's worth bringing up, though, that daunting lineup of what they've done against left-handed pitchers. 235 batting average. That's good for 24th in the league.
Yeah.
387 slug, 18th. If there's been any struggle for this lineup, it's been against a lefty. And this isn't just a random lefty. This is, as we just highlighted, this
Cole
is
Reagans.
An all-star guy that could have started the all-star game, but he's an all-star. So you have that. This is why I think the Royals have the pitching edge, even if Carlos Rodon, who's also a lefty, here's what the Royals have done against lefties. 243, 17th in the league, slugging, though, 380. That's 23rd. Now, maybe this is where, after all the talk about the ballpark, Cody, tonight you might be happy that right field exists in Yankee Stadium, because the slug percentage for the Royals against lefties, I just told you, 23rd in baseball. Maybe this right field short porch might be a good thing to help the old slug percentage against a lefty this evening.
Yeah, sure. Like, you know, take advantage of it where you can.
You know, I think that could end up being something we end up laughing about later on tonight. I would hope that's the case.
I just think it's a dumb stadium. I don't, you know, they can have whatever, you know, I guess have whatever you want. Certainly on that end. Carlos Rodon's an interesting matchup because it's not that he hasn't been a good major league starter. Obviously, Carlos Rodon's been a very good major league starter. The Royals have gotten him a number of times. The last time out, they did not. But over the course of Rodon's history, Royals have gotten to him quite a bit. The only problem is that you take small sample size versus life sample size, and the Royals have seen Rodon a lot because he was in their division quite a bit. So they got a sense of exactly where he is in his career against Kansas City. But does that matter? Or does it matter against this year's lineup, which is dramatically different than last year's lineup against the Royals, or all those things in between? And so, while they've gotten to Rodon before, that's what it really comes down to. Cole Reagans has got to be better than Carlos Rodon. That's really my baseline. We just gave numbers to it. You want to know the simple thing? He's got to be better than that guy. He's got to be better than the guy in the opposite side of the mound. I went ahead and looked it up, by the way. Against the Kansas City Royals in his career, Carlos Rodon has an ERA, let's see, where's the stat line? North of 4.5. So
okay,
it's not great.
Do you think
4.66 in 13 starts? He's given up 9 home runs in those 13 starts against the Royals, and a 1.493 WHIP.
Do you think maybe you're going to answer and say, "Hey, it doesn't really matter. Just got to be better than Rodon," and I'm with you. 6-5 was the score on Saturday. We know 5 runs wasn't good enough. Do you think it's a similar type of game? Do you think we're?
I think 5 runs is good enough tonight because I believe in Reagans.
I'm kind of with you, especially with how I would like to think they're going to manage the bullpen in terms of letting Reagans, even if he's in a tough spot, fifth, sixth, or seventh inning, that they're going to let him stay in versus Waka versus maybe Seth Lugo from the last two outings. Knowing that you're in danger of going down 2-0 in a best of 5 series, I would like to think that's the case. I think this could be a game where you win 3-1. You know, 4-2. I don't think we're seeing a 6-5 or an 8-5 type of game. If it's that again, then boy oh boy, Bobby can't be going 0-5, and Vinny can't be going 0-5, and Salvi can't be going 1-4 or 1-5. That just can't happen. We mentioned the numbers for Salvi. If there was a pitcher to get him out of this funk, Rodon historically is not a bad guy to match up against.
No,
if you believe in historical, goes back, you know, 10 years, essentially, you know, it's not just in the last calendar year.
But that's the one thing I'll say, though, is that from a scouting department, from JJ, from like this organization knows him. Like they know him better than most teams know him because they faced his ass a lot. Now, look, have all those guys? Have Salvi faced him a lot? Is Bobby? No, not as much for them. Salvi has, obviously, but the rest, Bobby and Vinny and those guys. But they've just been around. If we don't think that there's anybody in the organization who's been around the entire time Carlos Rodon has been facing the Royals, there is.
Yeah, Tommy Pham's another one.
Yeah, very few teams in Major League Baseball do what the Marlins just did, which is completely clean house after the end of the year. Usually some of those guys stick around. I know we're all tuned into playoff baseball. Typically, I'm tired of playoff baseball. I'll wait for a little bit, wait for the CSs or the World Series because I'm like, damn it, the Royals aren't in it. Way more locked in.
It's like the NCAA tournament. You care about the second weekend if your team is still in it. Otherwise, you might already be done.
Yeah, because you're like, ooh, what if they actually face one of these teams? I got to be honest. Even though I screw Dodgers fans for acting lame
as
hell.
Are you surprised?
And throwing stuff on the field like little crybabies. Jurickson Profar did one of the single greatest troll jobs I've ever seen in a playoff game that they won. When you win, you get a trash talk. If you missed it, in the first inning, Jurickson Profar goes all the way to the fence. He jumps right near the fence, and you can't quite tell. Did he get Mookie Betts' home run? And he's standing there, staring into the crowd, almost like the ball's in there. Mookie Betts is rounding the base.
Fireworks are going off, I think.
Fireworks are going off. Everyone's happy.
The scoreboard shows home run.
And then, Profar's like, whoopsie-daisy, has the ball. And everyone is hot. He trolled the fans. He trolled Mookie. He rubbed it in the whole stadium's face. God, I loved it.
It was awesome.
That was a great moment. That was a playoff moment. That was incredible.
That was awesome. Remember, too, by the way, this is what is also fun about playoff baseball. The night before, Shohei Ohtani didn't have a bat flip. He had a bat chuck.
Oh, I mean, it was force.
You know, and that was fun, too. Like, both these things are fun. I've never seen an MLB player do what Profar did, though. I'll tell you. And hold
he just
it,
stared
and wait that
at the
long.
Whole fan base.
You catch the ball. You know you caught it, and you just stare down the Dodgers fan, which then ultimately caused some problems later on in the game. There's a lot of trash talk. Tatis was chirping with fans as well. They had to have... I don't know, what would you guys say? 8 to 10 security guards in left field because
fans were
throwing stuff on the field. Again, I'll just say, let's not be, I'm not saying that fans don't, there's always a select group in any fan base. Dodgers have a little bit of a history.
A really bad history.
Bad history. There was that incident many years ago with the Giants fan where, they...
forced to pass away.
Yeah, I think the guy ended up passing away, in the parking lot. So
now that the Padres are good... That might be one of the best rivalries because the Padres have been the little brother forever to the Dodgers. So now that they're good, what are Dodgers fans, Cody?
Piss babies.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the fans handled it that way for sure. But that moment from Profar, that was, I feel like you see showmanship and showboating on somebody in other sports more. The only time you get it in baseball usually is the bat flip, right? That's the one moment when people get to be like, see, I got you, right? And I'm cool with bad flips. That's not me. I love them. But it's like you never see it on the defensive end where they like rub it in their face and to do it on their MVP level player, Mookie Betts, just in his face. Did you see how close he is to the fans? How short that wall is in left field down there? He was as close as you and I are, Gold. And he's just staring there, and you could see some fans like looking around for the ball. Like, did it land near me and it's in his damn glove?
That was awesome.
Oh, that moment was incredible.
We knew that would be a fun series. And that series is living up to hype. That split right now, one game apiece, Dodgers and Padres. And looking that like that one is heading to potential game 5 eventually, which would be back in L.A. But now they go to San Diego. So, by the way, that also confirms the start time for a potential game on Wednesday. Remember, if there was a chance that either team was sweeping, then the Royals game would have been an hour different. Time on Wednesday.
Now it
doesn't matter. Nothing is
6:08 on Wednesday.
Yep.
7:08 on Thursday if the Royals get there. When the Royals get there. Let's have some options.
I like it. All right. Up next, though, let's get back to the Chiefs for a little bit. We know the injuries. We already talked about that. But who's actually option number 1 or 2? I think it might surprise you. That's next.